I call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is 1:35 p.m. on Tuesday, March 7th. Present today, we have Representative Josephson, Representative Hannon, Representative Galvin, Representative Stapp, Representative Cologne, Representative Ortiz, Representative Kroc, Representative Tomaszewski, Co-Chair Foster, Co-Chair Edgman, and myself, Co-Chair Johnson. Assisting us today, we have Emma Turner from the LIO moderator and the Finance Secretary, Bree Wiley. Thank you for helping us out regularly every day. On today's agenda, we will hear an overview of the Governor's FY23 supplemental budget from the Office of Management and Budget. Presenting for the Office of Management and Budget will be Neil Steiniger, Director for the Office of Management and Budget, James Stenson, Director of the Office of Public Advocacy, Samantha Turow, Public Defender Agency, from the Public Defender Agency, Deb Etheridge, Director for the Division of Public Assistance from the Department of Health, Josie Stearns, Administrative Service Director from the Department of Health. Director Steiniger, would you please come forward, put yourself on the record, and if you want to bring anyone else to the table, please introduce your other presenters. Welcome to House Finance. You may begin at your whenever is convenient.
Thank you. Good afternoon. For the record, Neil Steiniger, Director of the Office of Management and Budget. And thank you for inviting me.
You could have kept going slightly. I want to make note before we begin that I will be stepping out at some point, and I will be turning the gavel over to Co-Chair Foster. So everyone is aware that that will happen. Okay, now I welcome House Finance. You may begin your presentation.
Thank you for inviting me here today to speak to HB 79, the Governor's Fast Track Supplemental Budget. Just by way of introduction, a Fast Track Supplemental Budget is a little bit different than a normal supplemental budget. So what we have here today are three specific items that have a level of urgency in the need for legislative action to ensure that the administration can execute on needs confronting the state. They're a little bit different than normal supplemental items. Other supplemental items often are related to, cost overruns that, may present funding challenges, but, were issues dealt with by an agency, through the course of the fiscal year that were unanticipated. In this case, these are issues that require additional funding to execute on additional operational costs in order to meet an unanticipated need going into the future. So we're looking for expedited consideration of these items to ensure that the Department of Administration and the Department of Health can both fulfill the mission in front of them related to kind of some specific circumstances that have arisen during this fiscal year. Through the slides, I'll be calling up representatives from those departments to explain the urgency and the need that we're presented with here today. In summary, in the Fast Track Supplemental Budget, there's about $8.4 million in total appropriations, $3.7 coming from federal funds, and $4.7 coming from unrestricted general funds. However, part of that is a transfer of $3 million from Medicaid to Public Assistance Field Services. And so the true increase in operational costs that we're talking about here is closer to $8 million in unrestricted general funds and that nearly $4 million in federal funds. So on slide three, this table is a summary of the items in the Department of Administration. And with permission of the chair, I'd like to bring forward Directors Stinson and Chereau of the Office of Public Advocacy and the Public Defender Agency to speak to the needs in their agencies.
Certainly. Welcome to House Finance.
Well, thank you, Chair Johnson. Good afternoon to everyone. I just want to begin with some gratitude on behalf of the Office of Public Advocacy for hearing our request. I know the state has many monetary challenges, and there are differences of opinion on how to handle those challenges. What I can tell you is that this is a pretty dire situation that we need this funding for. The Office of Public Advocacy's caseloads have hit a point where I think my fear is that we'll start to have in-house attrition again if we don't have additional contract authority to immediately relieve some of the pressure on the in-house attorneys. The Office of Public Advocacy, as has been talked about in other presentations that some of the members are aware of, has also faced other challenges sort of independent from the case backlog. More than happy to speak to some of those if anyone has any questions. But I think the reality of the situation is that if we get this additional funding, we'll be able to immediately start tackling this problem, whereas if we don't receive this funding rapidly, the case backlog will worsen. Our caseloads will continue to grow, and at the point that they're unsustainable, we'll start to lose people. I know Ms. Chereau at the Public Defender Agency is facing a similar challenge, which is concerning to OPA, because Office of Public Advocacy is a downflow agency. When the other agencies involved in the criminal justice system aren't doing well, particularly the Public Defender Agency, which is the frontline agency, it has a direct deleterious impact on our ability to execute our constitutionally and statutorily mandated duties. So that puts us between a rock and a hard place because there's really nowhere for these cases to go. They have to go to an in-house attorney or they have to go to a contractor. Those are my options. I'm mandated to take those cases from the court. So all that said, I greatly appreciate your consideration of this request, and I'm more than happy to answer any questions.
And for the record, testifying is James Stinson.
I forgot to introduce myself. I apologize, Chair Johnson.
Thank you. Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. And I think my question is actually for Mr. Steininger. I serve on DOA's subcommittee and completely understand and support the need. On the first page, line 10, we're referencing in this fast track supplemental. Oh, excuse me, I'm looking at the bill. It's appropriating money in two fiscal years. So I'm just trying to understand why we're doing part of this that are fast track supplemental for current fiscal year, but some of it should be an increase for next year, for FY24 operational, and I'm just trying to understand in the bill why it's structured that way in two places, line 10 for public advocacy on the first page, and then on the second page of the bill on line 2, it does it again for public defenders.
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, so those two appropriations are on what we call multi-year appropriations or a supplemental multi-year appropriation. So the idea here, and you can see, for example, the backlog contractor support on this slide here, the $750,000, that's one of those supplemental multi-years. The idea being that we know there's a surge in activity needed within both the Office of Public Advocacy and the Public Defender Agency to address the backlog. That surge won't be completed in this current fiscal year. So the idea in structuring the appropriation was we worked with OPA and PD to determine, you know, about how much do we think we'll need in fiscal year 23, but then structured the appropriation to ensure that if any of that money went unspent in fiscal year 23, say a case was taken on and, you know, continued into fiscal year 24, that appropriation would still be available and wouldn't expire on June 30th. And so that's the concept that we were working with in that structure.
One follow-up?
Follow-up, Representative Hammond.
Thank you. Through the chair. So, Mr. Steininger, how does that impact their FY24 regular budget that's in subcommittee for consideration? Is that going to bring down that appropriation, or we need the full request in FY24 and this multi-year supplemental?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, the amount, you can kind of think of the one-time cost need in the surge in support as a combination of the two appropriations. So the amount in this fast-track supplemental is our estimate of what we'll spend in 23, but some may push into 24, and then that amount in 24 is the addition to get us to the total amount projected in need for that immediate need facing the agency. So they are additive together. We need both. Yes.
Representative Josephson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, I'll start with Mr. Stinson. Mr. Stinson, you talked about OPA being a downflow agency. I understand the concept. at the top of the stream of flow is the Department of Law. They're getting nothing supplemental for House Bill 325, which is astonishing to me. but it suggests that you won't need anything because they're not going to vigorously prosecute new cases under HB 325, I guess, or that they'll do it within their means. But yet you're anticipating increased, essentially, sexual assault cases. That's what that's about. And they're saying, we're not spending any more money on that. What do you make of that?
So Representative Josephson, through the chair, you know, I don't want to speak out of turn about the Department of Law and their strategy for acquiring funding. What I can tell you is that my situation right now is pretty critical. I think we're at a precipice. We absolutely anticipate increased prosecutions from HB 325. I agree with you on some of the logical inconsistencies there. The only thing I would posit is that over many previous years, sometimes there may have been resource differences in allocation to the various agencies. So some of what I'm feeling might be tied to a year where OPA did not receive resources and a different agency did. However, I think that OMB's strategy moving forward is one that makes sense, which is approaching this holistically and looking at what is the actual need, sort of absent of trying to go back and nitpick which bills got passed where and who got what in what years. It's more, let's just look at the reality of the situation now. So all I can tell you is I know what caseloads my attorneys have, and I know what kind of caseloads they have in terms of sexual assault cases currently, and I simply don't have the capacity to wait for that other shoe to drop. And some of OPA's need is also driven by ancillary factors, obviously, independent court action, other things which I know some of the representatives are familiar with. That may also be stressing the agency. That said, I think we based our fiscal note off of a projection from Department of Law, and I think it's a conservative one in terms of what we're anticipating.
Follow up?
Yes, go ahead and follow up.
Next question is for through the chair for Mr. Steininger. I see you're on the calendar as the first bill, maybe, except for yesterday. The first... Well, it's an appropriation bill, a standalone sort of bill that we could bring to completion, I guess, fast if the chair's desire, et cetera. Here's my question. Is this – so I see the words fast track and I say this administration is doing a good thing. It wants action now because I don't understand fast track beyond that. And my question is the administration going to let this – is it going to treat it like more like a supplemental or an amendment, or are you asking for this to be brought to the floor quickly?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, we're asking for this to be passed by the legislature quickly. We took these three items from our existing supplemental and amendment package and repackaged them into this separate bill, in consideration of the urgency of the needs in Office of Public Advocacy, Public Defender Agency, and the Division of Public Assistance. And we saw those three needs as separate from and more urgent in terms of our ability to operate and meet the needs of the state. It, particularly in these three areas for, you know, some of the most needy within the state. So this... we want to see this bill move forward and move forward cleanly to address these three issues specifically as expeditiously as possible.
Thank you, Madam.
Thank you. I guess I would like to request, I'm not sure if it would be OMB or exactly who it would be, if we could get a report on how the different funding has transpired between the courts and, I mean, between Department of Law and maybe the OPA attorneys and so on, just see if there is a need for leveling in the future. So I guess I'm putting that out there without knowing exactly who to request it from, but I'm going to say OMB because you're right in front of me. So if you would. And I'm also going to pass the gavel over to Representative Foster at this time, and so he can take over to me, chair of the meeting.
Thank you very much, Representative Ortiz and then Representative Colon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, through the chair. I think my first question is kind of a follow-up on Representative Josephson's questions around the fast track. And I in no way am opposed to, and cl- clearly to be supportive of the needs that have been brought before us. So my question is just more around the process. It seems to me Mr. Steiniger, that we've had in the past, I think during your tenure, fast-track supplementals in the past, and they ended up not being so fast-tracked. We didn't actually get to them in the manner that that I think the original intent was hoped for. Is there anything different? Because the urgency is there, but is there anything different about the way this particular supplemental request has been brought forward to hopefully guarantee a more positive outcome in the term fast-tracking it? Or is this just going to be another wait and see what happens?
Mr. Steiniger?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, I think the difference here with this particular fast-track supplemental, because you are right. We have put forward fast-track supplementals before during my tenure, under previous tenures at the Office of Management and Budget, and under previous governors, and generally speaking, supplementals pass alongside the, mm-hmm. the operating and capital budgets. The difference here in the case of this fast-track supplemental is that we've limited it as much as possible to only those three items that present, true operational concerns for our agencies in terms of the impact on members of the public, particularly those where we have a higher moral obligation to serve. And that, limiting it down to just those items and not items of, kind of a greater policy discussion, we hope will help facilitate its speed at which it moves through the legislature, or at the very least communicates the urgency of the needs within our agencies.
Fair enough. A follow-up?
Follow-up.
And the next question perhaps would be for both representatives of both the Public Defender Agency and the OPA group. You talk about contracting out, and when the contracting for services often take place, they require RFPs and things like that. Is it different in this situation? So once you get the word that the legislature does in fact, if we do in fact act quickly on this issue, will you be able to contract out quickly and get these things moving? Or is there a lag time between the actual getting the word that you have the money and then actually contracting for the services?
I can start.
Samantha, you can put yourself on the record, please.
Yes, Samantha Shiro, Public Defender for the Alaska Public Defender Agency. Thank you to the committee for hearing from me today and our need. We, through the chair, Foster, to Representative Ortiz, we would be able to immediately spend those funds on contracting cases to private attorneys, and we are currently doing so, and in particular to stave off having to move to vacate from those new appointments in Bethel and Nome. But we have exhausted the balance of funds from our personal services line to be able to contract those cases to private attorneys. But our enabling statute does allow me to contract those cases immediately.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Representative, is that a follow-up on that? Representative Colomb and then Representative Edgman.
Thank you, Chair, through the chair. So this is a similar question to you guys. So one of the my understanding was the backlog came from COVID. And so I see the contractor rate and cap increase. Is this an anticipation of more cases coming, or is this money digging us out of the backlog? I guess I'm concerned. My immediate concern is the backlog right now, like today. Not that I'm not concerned about what's coming, but if each one of you can speak to that, if you get this money, are we getting out of the backlog, and how short of a time is that time frame?
Mr. Stinson?
Representative Colomb, through the chair. So I think the answer is both. Obviously, the HB 325 supplemental is designed to head off the anticipated increase. However, in the interim, that, in addition to the increased contractor rate and cap increase that's being included in here, is going to, in effect, still be going to tackle the backlog. So I think we're getting additional resources to sort of get us to the end of this fiscal year. And then my understanding is the governor's fiscal year 24 budget proposal is sort of the moving forward plan. But like the public defender, we do have a procurement exemption because it's a mandated service. So I would be instantly able to begin contracting, calling contractors, trying to find new contractors. And I will say that just the word being out that this is a potential has resulted in some increased interest with especially former public defenders, former OPA people, other defense agency firms. So we would be able to immediately start to try to tackle it.
Can I have a follow-up?
A follow-up?
So if we increase the cases pretty quickly, are you confident that the courts can handle those increased? Are you going to get another obstacle with the courts and the scheduling of the courts?
So through the chair, Representative Colomb, I think when you contract out these cases to private counsel, I think they are better able to negotiate these, perhaps fully investigate them. And it's an interesting question of whether or not we have enough judges as well, right? I guess that would depend on how many cases are getting pushed to trial. I think the current issue is that there is just a backlog of cases. I mean, if you caught a serious felony that needs to go to trial in fiscal year 19 or 20, your case is going on 3 or 4 years old. So we have a pile of those cases. So that's one issue. But the other issue is just that cases keep coming in, right? So you have to, I think, contract some of those out just to get breathing room for the in-house attorneys. And then those independent contractors have less cases. I think they have a better ability to probably resolve those cases, potentially short of trial, and they have other options at their disposal. I know the court system's trying to get creative with things like settlement conferences and other stuff. There's differences of opinion on how successful those are, but there are options out there. But I understand. I understand your point that there is a potential series of bottlenecks. What I know is that in the immediate, we definitely have to have a relief valve for some of these cases. And I know for the Public Defender Agency, obviously the situation in Nolan Bethel is pretty urgent.
And through the chair, Samantha Shrove, to Representative Colomb, I would echo those comments and add that it is digging out of the backlog. It is providing relief for our existing attorneys, primarily handling the unclassified attorneys who are already overburdened. But our new attorneys need the time to get more experienced, and then we're waiting for our next class of attorneys to start, who will really be third-year law students graduating from law school this spring, law clerks who will start in August and September. So when we think about timing, this money won't instantly fix it. It won't erase this backlog that accumulated over years, but it will certainly help immensely in providing some of that relief and, again, trying to stave off having to not accept those new appointments right now in Nolan Bethel, but we're very close in Palmer and other areas of the state as well. So I would echo it's a pretty dire situation for our clients and for our overburdened attorneys. We don't want to see the backlog increase further, and we don't want to lose more of our most experienced attorneys. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Edgemond.
Yeah, I think my major question was just asked a moment ago, but I was just looking at the numbers as was pointed out to me. Is that a typo at the bottom of the 7.8 million? Because if you add 3.1 to 1.5, I mean, I presume it's probably a carryover from a previous slide or something.
Through the chair, Representative Edgemond, you're correct. Typo.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, any further questions? Okay, I see no further questions. Do you want to move on to the next slide, Mr. Steininger?
Thank you.
Slide 4 is covering the Division of Public Assistance, and with permission of the chair, I'd like to invite up Director Deb Esridge and Assistant Commissioner Josie Stern, who can help speak to the needs and public assistance. In summary, the amount here is $3.1 million in unrestricted general fund, which is being proposed to transfer from excess in the Medicaid services appropriation, and $3.7 million in federal funds.
Great, thank you. And do you have anything for the record, or if you could maybe both put yourself on the record?
Yes, thank you. For the record, my name is Deb Etheridge. I'm the Director of the Division of Public Assistance.
For the record, Josie Stern, Assistant Commissioner.
And do you have any opening statements before we go to questions?
Yes, Chair. This is Deb Etheridge, Director of Division of Public Assistance. And I'd like to talk a little bit about what this means if we weren't able to receive the supplemental. As you may know, we're experiencing a tremendous backlog in our SNAP cases, which also people know as food stamps. And because of that backlog, individuals are going without benefit. And to some areas in Alaska, that is critical because they are essentially a food desert. They are without a food bank or access to food. And so this, within this request, we are not only asking for additional staff, but we're also asking for additional support to handle our virtual contact center so that we can then pivot our other staff to move off the contact center to really work on our backlog. In addition to the backlog that we're experiencing with SNAP, there's some cascade effects to other programs. And then we're also preparing to unwind from the public health emergency, which means that we'll be doing redeterminations on all Medicaid recipients starting April 1st for the next 12 months. And so this request is to help us prepare and get out of the backlog and then prepare for that effort.
Great. Thank you. And how many folks did you say would possibly be brought on to help with the backlog with SNAP?
To the chair, 30 individual 30. Eligibility technicians.
Thank you. We've got questions from Representative Stapp and then Representative Josephson.
Thank you, Chair Foster. So I have a couple of questions, if you could indulge me there, Chair. Through the chair to Director Etheridge, Assistant Commissioner Stern, and probably our illustrious OMB director as well. So my first question is going to be, outside of Medicaid services, do you have any other funds within the department right now that you could do this transfer instead? There's a huge vacancy rate in the department, so is there any other pots of money that are kind of sitting around there that you would need to have a direct transfer?
Ms. Stearns?
For the record, this is Josie Stern, Assistant Commissioner with the Department of Health. Through the chair to Representative Stapp, this was the only pot of money with enough funds to be able to support the Division of Public Assistance's needs.
And follow up. Thank you, through the chair to Assistant Commissioner Stern. So we have talked in subcommittee at length at the mid-term solutions and long-term solutions to some of the problems at public assistance, but we have not spent a lot of time on immediate relief for folks on SNAP. The governor spent $1.7 million on food. I know for a fact that there is also a $6.9 million reappropriation for a capital project, which also comes out of the same pot of money. So my question to you folks at the department, if there is an immediate need for additional relief for our SNAP recipients through our food banks, we have already identified $6.9 million in funds that are available to do so, and we have the authority to direct them if so choose. So my question is, do we need to take that $6.9 million reapproach and direct it to an immediate need for staff?
Ms. Stearns or Mr. Steiniger?
Through the chair, Representative Stapp. So I believe what you're asking is if we should take any of the other excess money in the Medicaid services program and direct it to other needs effectively.
Correct.
Yes. So we are confident in the $3 million in excess money in the Medicaid program to satisfy this need. One thing about Medicaid projections, though, is they are not necessarily hard and fast. You know, week over week, we get additional check writes coming in with money being spent out of the Medicaid program. The structure of the appropriation that you're referring to for the IT system for the Division of Public Assistance is structured to use whatever is remaining at the end of the year to buy down that general fund cost in fiscal year 24 for the IT system. A portion, and I'll allow Director Etheridge to speak a little bit to the need for that IT system. A portion of the issue here in public assistance, though, is that the solution to that issue is that implementation of the IT system. And so that appropriation for the IT system is of critical need to the work being done at the Division of Public Assistance. So kind of any rediversion of the funds used to fulfill the need for that IT system would simply result in exacerbated problems within the Division of Public Assistance. And I think Director Etheridge might be able to speak to that as well a little bit.
Ms. Etheridge?
To the chair, again, this is Deb Etheridge, representative. It's a multi-pronged, as we have said before in testimony, it's a multi-pronged approach. Right now we're focused on staffing, on additional support through contract as we prepare to unwind. However, our legacy system is not prepared to be as dynamic and nimble as our other ARI system. And so the need for the IT system changes is exactly that. In order for us to be prepared and get up to speed, we have to be able to move off that legacy system and onto it's a cloud-based portal.
Your follow-up. Yeah, so thank you, Director Etheridge. I'm going to just follow up to our illustrious OMB director real quick. So you're confident enough that this money is available to request this reappropriation, and you're confident enough to submit a capital request with a $6.9 million reappropriation for an IT system, but you're not confident that that money might not be available for another purpose. Did I understand you correctly?
Through the chair, representative staff, not exactly. So I'm confident that $3 million here you see on the slide is going to be available in excess in Medicaid, unless we see, you know, some very massive increases in Medicaid reimbursements and our weekly check rights. The structure of the appropriation for the IT project is just using the remaining amount available. It's estimated currently to be 6.9, but it could end up being 1 million. It could end up being 18 million. It's sort of hard to tell at this stage in the fiscal year. So I guess the point that I'm trying to make is if you took that 6.9 estimate and you applied it to an immediate need, because that 6.9 million may not be realized in excess in the Medicaid program, that immediate need that you placed it to would be in jeopardy. The IT project, the way that we've structured that appropriation, it backfills with general fund, and also as an IT project, it will take a little bit of time to execute on. And so should there be some shortfall there, it could be addressed in the next legislative session once that, you know, becomes apparent. If you used that $6.9 million as a direct grant out to recipients in the community, we would have to wait until after June 30th, really after August 1st, in order to execute on that appropriation, because that's when we'll know the true lapse from the Medicaid program. Yeah. So there will be some timing issues with using the money for that specific purpose.
Yeah, one final follow-up, if I could, Chair.
Representative Staff.
Yeah, sorry, I'm not hammering the horse here. Director, so that begs the question as to why you would include a reappropriation at all in a capital request if we are not confident that the money available is going to be there for a capital request. So my question is, why not simply request all the money out of GF rather than demonstrate a reappropriation that may or may not materialize?
Mr. Steininger?
Through the chair, Representative Stapp, we're doing that in order to ensure that the amount of money we need to obligate out of FY24 funds is as low as possible. I'm sure from previous presentations that I've given, you've seen that we're projecting a greater than $400 million deficit in fiscal year 24. And so really in order to achieve the needs that we have in front of us as a state, we are having to use effectively every different budgeting tool we possibly can. And one of those is to use, you know, reappropriations of estimated values to try to, you know, reduce the need for FY24 revenues.
Thank you.
Representative Josephson?
Through the chair, Mr. Steininger, you've mostly answered this question. I was just going to ask how you know what the excess would be, but you essentially at least discussed it in your answer to Representative Staff. I just want to make sure that providers are paid and that payments that are due in July are made in July. Can we be confident about that?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, we're confident that this appropriation here shown on the slide could be executed without creating any risk to the providers in the Medicaid program.
Just a quick follow-up. I mean, if the administration, this is just me speaking, had said, look, we need $3,088,000 in general fund. Other than this transfer, I would have supported that. But if this is how you want to provide for this cure or partial cure, I don't expect you to do that for SNAP, the redeterminations, freeing up personnel to work on the backlog. I'm in support of it.
Mr. Sandinger?
Yes, Chair Foster and Representative Josephson. To add a little bit more to my comments about this transfer, in fiscal year 23, one of the challenges that we're facing as a state is that our current revenue projections with the amount of supplementals, including this transfer, you know, leaves a $0 surplus. We're effectively spending all of our projected revenue in fiscal year 23. And so, like looking to every tool that we can to achieve our needs in fiscal year 24, we're having to do the same in fiscal year 23. So when each agency came to us with their supplemental needs this year, you know, we asked those agencies to look within their existing budgets to see if there's money that could be moved around to achieve a supplemental need so that we, you know, could continue to remain under that projected revenue. So the Division of Public Assistance need, you know, the department identified that there was excess in Medicaid services that we could use for that transfer. So that's why we're using this mechanism in this specific case.
Thank you.
Representative Gelman.
Thank you, Chair Foster. Through the chair, I just would like to ask one clarifying question. In using the transfer from the Public Assistance Field Services, and this is maybe a repeat of what Representative Josephson was asking, but I just want to say that very simply, will there be no other unintended consequences where other people do not get services that are needed because we're transferring money from this pot?
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, no. Based on our projection for Medicaid that we currently have, there is more than enough surplus in Medicaid services to cover this $3 million. The Medicaid budget in fiscal year 23, the appropriation made, had assumed that there would only be two quarters of enhanced FMAP in fiscal year 23. We're going to experience almost but not quite four quarters. And so that's where that excess funding in the Medicaid program really is coming from, is that difference between what we had anticipated in federal participation versus what we're actually going to experience this year. And I don't know if there's any additional information that maybe Assistant Commissioner Stern would like to add to that.
Great. Representative Cologne.
Thank you, Chair. Through the chair, I'm not sure who could answer this, but so if I'm understanding this is Medicaid eligibility redeterminations, right? So, but you spoke to the backlog and the SNAP. So are you saying that this money is going to hire three new eligibility technicians? If that's where the money's going to, is all from Medicaid to the SNAP program, or is it actually going to the redeterminations?
Ms. Etheridge?
Through the chair, this is Representative, this is Deb Etheridge. The title is Medicaid Eligibility Redeterminations. However, we take an approach of whole case. So an individual often is on multi-program, and so we work all program, and so that applies to the SNAP program. And our eligibility technicians that we will hire, I believe you said three, it's actually 30, and they will be able to work all programs.
Oh, all programs. Follow-up?
Follow-up.
So if this is, we're fast-tracked this supplemental, but this all depends on hiring 30 new people? Are you retraining 30 existing people?
Through the chair, Representative, this is hiring new individuals. And we have a number of new individuals who we've hired already and are going through training. So this is new individuals.
Okay. Can I follow up?
Follow. Sure.
So you have some filled. Do you know the timeline and how long it will take to hire and train where they're actually working on the backlog?
Through the chair, Representative, it takes on an expedited or if we do single program training, it takes 8 to 10 weeks to do training, and then we have additional 100% follow-up to ensure quality. So what that means is we have 100% case review for an additional 4 weeks.
Okay, one more follow-up. Okay. So the money's fast-tracked, but this isn't going to solve anything for another 3 months, correct? correct?
Through the chair, we have a number of individuals who are in various stages of hire and training. And so those individuals will be able to work on the SNAP backlog while the others are training and preparing for the Medicaid redeterminations, which have to start in April.
Okay, one more follow-up?
Follow-up.
Sorry. So can you give me an idea about how many you already have existing, like already in the system, working their way
through the chair, representative? We have approximately 120 individuals who are able to draw down work and approve. We have to use merited staff to approve those. We have another group of individuals who handle our initial workflow. And so that means that they receive application, they receive electronic signature, they file the cases, and they register them within our database so that they're able to be drawn down and worked by our eligibility technicians.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Representative Edgman?
Yeah, just curious about the funding source behind the fast-track bill. If it were to go forward, this wouldn't require a CBR draw, would it?
Through the chair, Representative Edgman, no, it would not.
Through the chair, because the funding source would be the SBR? Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Edgman, the funding source for this bill would be excess revenue in fiscal year 23. So currently, under current projected revenue, there's roughly $115 million in excess FY23 revenue that's not been appropriated. This would be appropriated against that amount. When you add in the other proposed supplementals in the other supplemental budget from the governor, it equals roughly that $115 million in excess revenue in total. But with all of those included, it still is underneath that $115 million level and doesn't require that three-quarter vote for CBR access.
Well, yeah, through the I certainly follow that, but we still have a quarter left in the fiscal year, do we not? So we're sort of projecting forward for that remaining quarter in order to assume that we have a $115 million surplus at this point. I mean, is that an erroneous assumption?
Through the chair, Representative Edgman, that's a correct assumption. Our most recent public forecasts were released in the end of December, on December 15th or mid-December. We will be having new spring forecasts coming out here towards the end of this month, towards the end of March, coming from the Department of Revenue. And those will provide an update to the amount available in fiscal year 23. This appropriation vehicle would not require a three-quarter vote, as it's well under the current projected excess. Depending upon that revenue estimate, we may need to look for other tools to handle the other supplemental requests that we have.
Mr. Chairman, I only bring that up because I heard vis-a-vis the other body's finance committee that there might be some concern that we would run out of money between now and the end of the fiscal year, but that perhaps is a conversation for another time. My other point I'd like to touch upon is, you know, I heard from both Director Stinson and Chereau not a sense of urgency, but a sense of almost, you know, emergency situation, unless, you know, my ears heard the wrong sort of characterization. Why would this not have been brought up earlier, a lot earlier, in fact?
Mr. Steininger?
Yes. Through the chair, Representative Edgman. So these items were brought forward in our budget amendment packages and our supplemental budget, you know, at the normal timeline of release and as quickly as possible after we found out about the emergent concerns as they relate to the Office of Public Advocacy and Public Defender Agency, as we found out about the, you know, their needs in Western Alaska and that, you know, specific emergent issue, we put forward those budget amendments fairly shortly after that. You are right in that these are, you know, fairly emergency situations that we're dealing with. That is why we, you know, put forward this vehicle to split them off from the other supplemental items. One piece here, that discussion of tracking revenue that's available to the state in fiscal year 23, we are keeping an eye on that, and we know that once the fiscal year 23, once the spring forecast comes out, we'll have to have that conversation about, you know, how much available revenue is there in 23. Are there other tools that we need to use? However, we're encouraging swift adoption of these specific supplemental items. They're well underneath any amount of change that may happen in that revenue projection. And those conversations around how we may be able to accommodate the other things, like the fire supplementals that we've already expended, things like that, the conversations about what tools and what mechanisms we use to achieve or to meet those needs, we can have those conversations, you know, with the ample amount of time to fully have that conversation without delaying the action that needs to be taken at the Office of Public Advocacy, the Public Defender Agency, and Public Assistance. These needs are so much more urgent that waiting to have that broader conversation about how we handle the overall fiscal picture of fiscal year 23, you know, only serves to harm the ability of these two agencies to achieve their needs that are much more immediate than that broader political conversation.
And if I might, Mr. Gautier, I offer that line of questioning because I think, as we all know, to put an appropriations bill on the floor this early in session opens up and invites all type of floor amendments, or at least the possibility of it. So these requests had better be, worth it, I guess. And I'm not trying to mischaracterize here or to say that they're not worth it. But, you put an appropriations bill on the floor, any member can offer anything as a means to join, what's in the bill. And that is something that really concerns me. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Representative Josephson?
Through the chair, I don't want to lengthen the hearing any longer than necessary, but I was just a little confused. You said this is well under the $115 million excess. Clearly it is mathematically, but then you said when you add the other supplemental requests, it absolutely is not well under. But then you suggested that any variability in oil price shouldn't matter too much, where I've seen that it could matter tremendously. So I'm just a little unclear about whether FY23 will be fully funded. And I don't want to be a difficulty to the administration. I just want to get the fiscal year fully funded. I know of a bunch of options to do that, and I'm available to help with that. But, if you want to briefly respond to that, you're welcome to. I'm ready, and don't misunderstand me, I would vote for this today. If the chairs want to move it out, I'd vote for it on the floor tomorrow. I'm ready. I just need a little clarity on what June 30th looks like.
Mr. Steininger?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, when you take all of the expenditure needs in the supplemental budgets between the supplementals for fire, supplementals for Department of Corrections, supplementals for Department of Public Safety, all of those together, yes, we are effectively at a $0 surplus deficit under current projected revenue. These items combine the total general fund need, back to slide one, total general fund need is less than $5 million, less than $4.7 million. And so when I say, I'm confident that that can be accommodated, granted, we all know the volatility of oil. That's something that, could change in a day. However, based on the price of oil today, based on the revenue projections that we have, we could pass this budget today and sign it without a three-quarter vote to access the CBR. When we look at the revenue updates that we'll get from the Department of Revenue come the end of this month, and there may be need to have that conversation about how do we balance fiscal year 23 with the available revenue and the supplemental needs that we have. That will be a wider conversation about what tools that we have that may need to happen. It may not need to happen. It may be something that we see, revenue continue or oil price continue at the place it is today, and that will make that conversation unnecessary. If it crashes sometime in the future, we'll have to have that difficult conversation. the point that I'm trying to make is that these needs, you know, waiting to have that conversation before we address these needs hampers our ability to service, you know, a large set of fairly needy Alaskans. And so that's why we are here asking for this consideration, knowing full well that we will have to likely have some conversation as we address the rest of the supplemental asks. But those are items that that can work through that that delay in that conversation.
Thank you. Okay, do we have any further questions of the committee? Representative, okay. I see no further questions. Any closing statements?
No, just thank you for your consideration of this bill.
Great. Okay, well, thank you very much for coming for us, and thank you to all the ASDs and directors and Public Defender Agency for coming for us here. Next House Finance Committee meeting is scheduled for Wednesday, March 8th, 2023 at 1:30 p.m. And when we go to that meeting, first we'll hear a budget overview from the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. And we'll have Julie Sandy, the commissioner, before us, Michaela Fowler, deputy commissioner, Hannah Lager, administrative services director. And then the second item on the agenda will be a presentation of a long-term forecast of Medicaid enrollment and spending in Alaska. And we'll have Ted Helvoit, vice president, Evergreen Economics, Medicaid consultants. So if there's nothing else to come for the committee, we will be adjourned at 2:26 p.m. Thank you.